Let's call this joint meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee and the DOT Senate Finance Subcommittee to order. Let the record reflect, it's 1:02 p.m. on Tuesday, January 26th, 2016. We're in the Butcherich Room, 205. Let the record also show we have a quorum to do business. We have Senator Bishop, co-chair, or vice chair, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Stedman, Senator Egan. We're hoping to see Senator Kelly and Meyer. He has a bill up, though, and may not see him. So I'd also like to thank and recognize our committee staff and Krekelberg from Senate Records, LAO staff Matt Smith, Lynn Smith, no relation, and Trevor Fulton, my committee staff. We are here today to give the first hearing of Senate Bill 132, Electronic Tax Returns and Motor Fuel Tax, requested by the governor. We have with us Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue, and Revenue Commissioner Randy Hoffbeck. They'll present the bill and be available for questions from the committee, and then we will have public testimony today. May or may not close public testimony. It depends on sort of the interests that we see today. And I believe this is one of the first revenue bills being heard from the administration today. I made the statement yesterday. No one likes the idea of new taxes on Alaskans. We're in a unique spot. You can't solve the problem just by repurposing existing financial assets. You can't solve the problem just by taxing Alaskans, and you can't solve the problem just by cutting. So I'm certainly willing to hear this bill and see what the administration has in mind. So we're not going to be passing a bill out today, but with that, if you two gentlemen can join us up here, introduce yourself for the record and present the bill, we'll take questions from committee members.
Chairman Manchicki, members of the committee, for the record, Randy Hoffbeck, Commissioner of Revenue. I'm here with my Deputy Commissioner, Jerry Burnett, to speak about the bill. I did want to just spend a little bit of time to put the bill into the context of the greater fiscal plan, the new Sustainable Alaska plan that the governor has rolled out, because I think there's a little bit of uncertainty of how all these bills fit together. And so the new Sustainable Alaska Plan really has three components to it. It has the Alaska Permanent Fund Protection Act, which is the component that creates the model for using our investment earnings as well as repurposes the royalty revenues and production tax in order to create a sustainable draw for funding government. That draw, along with existing taxes, leaves us about $1 billion short of a balanced budget. And so the governor has proposed then a series of cuts that are embedded within the budget document, and then a series of bills on new revenues, of which this is one of those bills. So this bill is just standard tax policy. It fits within the broader plan, but there's nothing complex about any restructuring of it whatsoever. It's just simply an adjustment in the rate on an existing tax. With that, I would turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Burnett to walk through the bill.
Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, what are you protecting the permanent fund from?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, the issue there is quite simply that if we do nothing and we just continue to operate as we currently are, that within 4 years we would deplete our savings and essentially be in a position of either a very draconian cuts to the services that the government could provide, or we would be in a position of having to consider whether we would get a constitutional amendment and actually start spending from the corpus of the permanent fund. So the idea here is to make changes now instead of later in order to essentially preserve the fund and the dividend program within the fund as well.
Through the chair, we'll be asking. I'll be asking obviously a lot more questions on the whole concept of protecting the permanent fund from whom and from what and from how. What do you want? You brought it up, so I figured I'd ask. Who are you protecting it from?
I assume the commissioner didn't name the bill. They probably had a whole team of folks do that. But
And I do have to step out in about 15 minutes for another committee hearing, but the intention was always all along that Deputy Commissioner Burnett would talk about the bill. So I'll be available for about 15 minutes, and then I will have to step out.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Burnett. I'm the Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. Here to talk about the motor fuel tax bill, Senate Bill 132. It's an act requiring the electronic submission of a tax return or report within the Department of Revenue relating to the motor fuel tax and providing for an effective date. Motor fuel taxes in Alaska began in 1945. The tax rates have increased over time, but the structure has remained unchanged during that time.
One second. Do we not have the presentation on the forward screen for a...
Oops.
It's always just happened.
The monitor just turned on.
Can you maybe just push the on button on the monitor? And Senator Dunleavy has a very technical background, and clearly, thank you.
It's always easiest to solve the problems with the simplest step first, big, complicated approaches.
Please continue.
Okay, so tax rates have increased over time, but the structure has remained unchanged. The last increase was 1970 for highway taxes, marine taxes in 1977, and aviation fuel tax in 1994. So that means our motor fuel tax has been 8 cents a gallon since 1970. In 1970, I had a car. I would go to this gas station, put a dollar's worth of gas in, and run it for the weekend, and I got 15 miles to the gallon. But, you know, that 8 cents to me was a lot of money back then, because gas was about 30 cents a gallon. Now gas is a little bit more expensive. That 8 cents per gallon is not near the impact that it was in that sense. I think, as I recall, the minimum wage then was $1.60 an hour. So just to put that in context of where we are and what we're doing. The tax was suspended from September 1, 2008 to August 31st, 2009. As you may recall, in 2008, the state brought in more money in 1 month than we're bringing in the entire year from oil this year. Gasoline prices, motor fuel prices were very high, and the policy decision was made to remove this cost from it. In 2015, HB 158 added 0.95 cent surcharge on motor fuels and other refined fuels. It was intended for spill prevention and response fund, and that was the chair's bill. So this motor fuel tax proposal increases all tax rates.
Mr. Burnett, just before you go forward, as we have this discussion, just remember the struggle in adding less than a penny.
I do remember that. So yes, there's no levity intended in anything I might say.
Sure.
So just anyway, the increase is all the tax rates, the highway rate from 8 cents a gallon to 16 cents a gallon, the marine tax from fuel tax from 5 cents a gallon to 10 cents a gallon, jet fuel from 3.2 cents a gallon to 10 cents a gallon, aviation gas from 4.7 cents per gallon to 10 cents a gallon, and then takes the off-road use credit from 6 cents a gallon for highway fuel to 12 cents. So when you buy gas for your four-wheeler or a bunch of four-wheelers or equipment for mining or something, you're not paying the full highway fuel tax, or you don't have to. You have to apply for a credit against it.
So just to point out, you're still doubling the off-road tax rate from 2 cents
right.
to 4 cents. Is
yes,
that correct?
We're doubling the rate, we're doubling the credit, and doubling the rate. So it has that same effect. And we require that the taxpayers file electronically. It provides for an exemption process in certain cases.
On that point, the penalty for not filing timely electronically is...
I would have to
$25 or something like that, or one per percent?
I can get that information to you. I don't have it with me.
Okay, thank you.
At this point. And there is a penalty for not filing on time. Alaska's fuel taxes are among the lowest in the U.S. Highway fuel is the lowest. Jet fuel is the 35th lowest out of 50. Aviation gas the 24th out of 50. Under this bill, Alaska taxes would still be below the national average for motor highway taxes, which is 20.17 cents for highway fuel, would be slightly above the national average for jet and aviation fuel. We don't have comprehensive data for other states' marine fuel. I think most of the states don't have a marine fuel tax. It's probably taxed for on highway use for the most part. Impacts of this: gas pump prices are going to go up a little bit. You know, I think it's clear this is going to be passed on to the consumer. Aviation taxes will be available to fund certificated urban and rural airports, and this an increase in aviation fuel taxes was requested by the Aviation Advisory Committee as preferable to landing fee increases at the airport, state-owned airports. If I could on this,
Senator Bishop,
I can answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point, can you just give me a snapshot of who some of those advisory committee members might be?
I don't have it with me. Deputy Commissioner Hatter from DOT can answer that question. You could answer it now or after I'm finished.
I
anyway,
so yeah, probably need to ask.
For the record, my name is Steve Hatter. I serve as Deputy Commissioner for Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Through the Chair, Senator Bishop, the Aviation Advisory Board, actually is the correct name for it, they're all appointed by the Governor. It's a cross-section of aviation stakeholders, I guess, probably the best way to say it. So there's a certain carrier representation, there's rural representation, there's urban representation. So it's really to try to get a cross-section of, an aviation-centric state, the various stakeholders that would kind of represent the voices out there across Alaska that have interest in aviation.
Thank you.
So before you get started, your statement says gas prices at the pump will rise. We don't know that. It depends on future price of the commodity, right? But relatively speaking, the tax proportion will increase.
Right.
So what if there were a sales tax in the future? Would you see that as being stacked, or would you see fuel prices as being one of the exemptions under a sales tax?
Mr. Chair, Senator Machiki, there is no proposal from the administration to have a statewide sales tax. I believe some cities in Alaska exempt motor fuel tax from sales taxes. And I know Juneau doesn't, for example, so you're paying sales tax on fuels here. But that is a policy decision that would have to be made with a sales tax bill.
So just to help Alaskans understand that difference, I come from the Kenai Peninsula where it's not exempted, and this is a per gallon state tax, but that's on the quantity, but the sales tax of course is on the value. So the sales tax fluctuates with the price of refined products, and a fuel tax is stationary. Senator Dunleavy.
On the aspect of dedicating some of this money towards aviation, what issues are there, if any, with the Constitution in terms of dedicated?
Senator Dunleavy, to the Chair, the Constitution provides that no tax or license can be dedicated to a specific purpose unless it was prior to statehood or required for participation in a federal program. The FAA regulations for their grants, for other money that we receive from the federal government, require that all income received on airports is spent on airports. So it is not subject to the dedication clause because it's exempted from that by the federal preemption and requirement that it be spent there. So aviation gas is, in fact, the tax on aviation gas, while it goes into the general fund, an amount equal to that has to be spent at airports. And for those airports that are municipally owned, like Juneau, Kenai, I believe, Wasilla Palmer, there's shared tax back from the state. There's an appropriation in the budget bill every year to share tax back to that state. And this year, I think it's about $160,000. This would make an increase up by about $200,000 going back to those locally owned airports for gas sold at those airports.
Just one quick question on top of this, a slightly different topic, but what's the estimated overall cost of the overhead to administer this tax?
To the chair, to Senator Dunleavy, there is no additional overhead and ongoing operating cost added by raising the fuel tax rates. So there is a small cost, I believe it's $50,000 or $100,000, to reset the system, but there's no ongoing cost beyond what we're spending right now by increasing rates, because we're not changing any structures to the tax system.
Okay, thanks.
So last year's change had no fiscal note, and you'd see the same. I mean, same form, just the rates would be different, but distributors would fill out a similar form.
Yeah, through Mr. Chair, the forms would have to be changed. The calculations in the state system have to be changed. So there's an upfront cost to make those changes. But beyond that, it makes no difference.
Okay.
Okay, we're estimated that increasing the tax rate will more than double tax collections because, well, we're doubling the motor fuel tax, we're more than doubling the jet fuel tax and the aviation gas tax. So additional revenue is about $49 million per year, with about $200,000 shared back to municipally owned airports. The remainder goes to the general fund and is allocated in special accounts for road, water, transport, and aviation facilities, but other than the aviation portion, the legislature has the ability to spend the money generally. These estimates were based on the fall 2015 revenue forecast and does not account for changes in fuel demand or stockpiling. And, you know, this is a small enough increase that it's unlikely to have a huge effect on fuel demand. I don't think I'm going to buy an electric car because I have to pay an additional 8 cents a gallon. And for a typical Alaskan who drives 20,000 miles a year at 20 miles per gallon, that's 1,000 gallons of fuel, this is $80 more in tax that's coming to the state. Now, I like to put this in a personal perspective. I fill my car up about 30 times a year with about 15 gallons of fuel. So the car I drive to work in the morning, I'm going to probably spend an extra $36 a year in fuel costs to do this. My boat, on the other hand, I'm probably going to use 2,000 gallons next summer, and that's going to cost me an extra $100.
So we don't disagree with you, but just to not make sure that Alaskans don't feel that we're trivializing doubling of fuel taxes in Alaska. When you think about all of the broad-based approaches the administration's making, they all add up.
They do. And the other thing I point out, that there could be some stockpiling. Distributors may buy fuel in larger quantities right before the tax change and sell it.
That always works itself out, though, right?
Right. That works itself out over time.
Other questions before we go on? Senator Bishop.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Jerry, the jet fuel, that's increases for domestic fuel, right? Isn't the overseas flights have some type of exemption?
Yes. Through the chair, to Senator Bishop, all jet fuel sold for international commerce is tax exempt.
Okay, thank you.
And that is the largest amount of jet fuel that's sold is tax exempt.
Okay.
So for implementation, which is Senator Dunleavy's question, we have to make changes to our tax revenue management system. Our revenue online system is set up for electronic returns. We have to change tax return forms. So we look at an implementation cost of about $50,000 to recreate tax forms, reprogram and test the tax system, and then no additional cost to administer the tax program afterwards.
So I have a general question for you, Mr. Burnett, if you don't mind. When you think about sort of the philosophy of tax policy, this is a user fee, right? If you don't purchase refined products, you don't pay the tax. The more right. refined products you purchase, the more tax you pay. It's an impact to businesses, likely more than individual Alaskans. But it seems to me that in tax philosophy, individuals support taxes that are sort of returned back to the systems where they use that item, or say a transportation system. We have no guarantee in this case. It's a general fund deposit other than the minor proportion that goes to airports. How do they see that return other than in general fund expenditures? Well,
Mr. Chair, many states actually do dedicate their tax, motor fuel taxes to highway maintenance. I mean, it's clear, and it's very clear that it's a user fee. It goes right where it is. Historically, Alaska spends, in current days, Alaska's spending a great deal more on highway maintenance than people are paying in user fees. So we can be sure that what the effect of this is that there's maybe enough money to offset some other what would otherwise be reductions in highway maintenance, because this will offset money that is currently being spent. So this increased tax, well, it won't be dedicated. It is identified in our system. People will be able to see how much is being collected and compare that to how much is being spent on highways.
So might another way to say that, and I'm not correcting the way you phrased it, but clearly the best value we get from the feds is the highway match, right? Most of our state, all of our state highways are, what's the match on that? Is that 90-10?
Mr. Chair, yes, 90-10.
90-10. So it may make more general fund dollars available for an adequate match to keep our highways in better condition.
Yes, I think that would be a very good way to say it.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's just a statement. I don't need a response. I think I'm close enough on this, but if somebody wants to fact check it, they can. But, you know, Alaskans, if this was to come to pass, won't feel all of the burden. We would capture some traveling public from outside our borders. I believe there's an excess of 60,000 motorhomes and fifth wheel campers that come through the border at 1202, and I don't have the number at my head marine craft that might come up from down south too that could maybe add to the.
Yes, clearly through the chair, Senator Bishop, anyone who's using the highways and buying fuel in Alaska to either use the highways or the waterways or to fly is going to be contributing to the state's budget and indirectly or directly going to help offset costs for maintaining those programs.
Thank you.
I'm a fan of the Tax Foundation publication they put out annually that compares the tax burden broad-based and specific taxes in each state. And I wish I had the slide up that shows us paying $500 a year essentially in broad-based state taxes, which I assume includes motor fuel taxes and estimation of motor fuel taxes.
Yes, it does.
Okay. I just wonder where that, how that shakes out. Have you sort of evaluated, paid an extra $80 a year? Where, if this were the only tax to pass this year, which is just this $49 million is a small chunk of the gap, but if this were the only gap to be filled this year, it adds $80 to that $500 of tax burden?
Mr. Chair, that I think would still be like 25% of the average or less of what other people in other states pay in taxes. And, you know, the only state that competes with us, I think, is New Hampshire. And they're different.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of things I think we need to remember, that unlike all other states, we're the only state that owns the subsurface rights. So we are different. So comparing our fuel tax, our income tax, our sales tax, other mechanisms for state revenue gets a little distorted when you don't take into account that Alaska is structured different than the other 49 states. It would be like looking at Texas and not counting the farmer subsurface or the rancher subsurface or North Dakota subsurface owner. So we just need to remember that when we do our comparisons, because that tax book you're talking about doesn't reflect that. And it's a little bit more than a minor adjustment.
So just in entertaining your logic, Senator Stedman, wouldn't that mean if we applied the value of that substandard value that we pay minus $1,500 a year in state taxes last year, as opposed to plus $500, considering we had a $2,072 permanent fund?
I would say that one needs to recognize that the citizens of the state own a very valuable asset, and we need to factor that in when we walk through these calculations on taxes. And each individual can draw their own conclusions how they want to add that in. Some people ignore it and compare us directly to all the other states like we're the same and wonder why we look so radically different. There's good fundamental reasons why we look radically different. We were structured that way in statehood. And we just need to remember that as we work through this. And there will be other revenue bills that come forward in different committees and maybe some in this committee. And we'll, you know, deal with them one at a time as we try to work through this problem.
Okay.
I've not been able to meet our payroll.
Okay, the next couple of slides kind of show where this tax fits within the, sustainable plan and closing the budget gap. So if you look at page 11 here, budget of $5.2 billion and baseline revenue after a proposed legislation of $4.285 billion. Motor fuels, $49 million out of $457 million in additional revenue that's proposed by the governor in the package.
Okay.
And then the rest of this is a sectional analysis, which I can go through or not, depending on the will of the committee. It's not, I mean, you have a copy of it, and if you want me to go through it, I can. But
I think it's worthwhile. I don't know that we have anyone online for public testimony, so we have a little extra time.
Quickly go through Section 1, adds a $25 or 1% tax penalty for failure to file electronically unless an exemption is received. That's a question that Senator Bishop asked earlier. Section 2 requires electronic submission of tax returns, license applications, and other documents submitted to the Department of Revenue. Changes the general tax statute, AS 43.05, and will apply to all tax types administered by the department. Provides a process to request an exemption if a taxpayer does not have the technological capability to do so. Section 3 changes the per gallon tax rates for dealers for all categories of motor fuel. Highway fuel, gasohol is 8 cents to 16 cents, marine fuel from 5 cents to 10 cents, aviation gasoline from 4.7 cents to 10 cents, and jet fuel from 3.2 cents to 10 cents. Section 4 changes the per gallon tax rates for users of all categories of motor fuel to the same numbers. Section 5 changes the motor fuel refund rate for off-road use when the tax has been paid from 6 cents to 12 cents. Section 6 is conforming applicability language, clarifying that the tax increases apply to motor fuel sold after the effective date. And the electronic filing requirement applies to returns submitted after the effective date. Section 7 is transitional language allowing for regulations to implement the changes. Section 8 is an immediate effective date for the transitional regulatory language. And Section 9 is an effective date of July 1, 2016 for the rest of the bill, including the tax rate changes. And with that, I think if you have additional questions after the committee, you can contact me or Commissioner Lucan.
Okay, I have one, Mr. Burnett. The vast majority of the refined product usage, you doubled the tax from 8 to 16 on highway, marine fuel 5 to 10, aviation gasoline, looks like you sort of rounded it. Doesn't look like there's any logic. You doubled it and added 6 cents. But jet fuel is a pretty substantial increase. Is there a reason for that that you can help explain?
I think, again, we'll go back to the question of where this money is used and who pays it. And so the jet fuel tax is an offset to increases in landing fees. So it would prevent the need for a landing fee at the airport by increasing jet fuels. And users would, in many cases, prefer to pay a tax on their fuel at a higher rate rather than have landing fees directly paid.
So what is the, instead of, so 200% would be 0.64 cents, you went 300%. So that extra.
Right, and since aviation gas is, or the revenues from all the aviation fuels that have to be spent at the airports, it's an offset to other fees that would be paid.
Do you know what that 3 cents represents?
Well, that's approximately what? This is tripling, like you say, it's tripling the rate, just slightly more than tripling the rate, because it would be 9.6 if you tripled the rate, the current rate.
Could you provide me with the value of the last 3.2 cents per gallon, please?
In fact, I believe.
You actually might have some help.
I might have.
Mr. Alper's waving.
Yeah, I think I actually have this, but I'll see. So that's going to be approximately $13 million from jet fuel and $1 million from aviation gas.
So if you divide the $14 million by three, that's
what we're getting. We're getting 4.1 now.
So that 4.1 is the offset. Instead of increasing landing fees, that raises about the same amount of money?
I think the costs at airports are going to be the same one way or the other. So this is additional, this money instead of landing fees. There were proposals to do landing fee increases, which perhaps Deputy Commissioner Hatter could speak to last year, and the board would prefer paying taxes rather than those landing fee increases.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Mr. Chairman, sure. So our certificated airports certified by the FAA typically can refer to those as the jet service airports in general. They're quite expensive to run, and the reason for the expense is really high FAA standards, so we're given a certificate to operate, and then they inspect regularly. And so to maintain the airports to that standard, it does run quite high. And so in looking at how to offset that, it's been made clear to us through the aviation stakeholders and through the Aviation Advisory Board in particular that landing fees would be much more of a challenge for the regional carriers, and so their preference was to bring in some additional revenue to offset those costs via the aviation fuel tax. They came strong with that opinion. They're actually meeting in town this week with the commissioner, and they're going to be available, I think, doing some pass-throughs of the hallways here. So That's sort of their strong feel of things for right now.
So I bring that up for a reason, my interest in going through this budget. I mean, we have a new reality in the state of Alaska with the fiscal gap that we're seeing that we don't think is going away in the near term. I'm going to be looking for departments, well, for users of state services to reduce their subsidies and eliminate whenever possible. Does this come close to filling that airport subsidy gap, or is it still substantial?
Mr. Chairman, it's still going to be substantial. This certainly puts a good dent in it. It's very much a step in the right direction, but again, it's the aggregate cost of running our certificated airports and our rural airport system is a big number, and this helps to offset some of that, but we're nowhere near covering the costs.
Okay. Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I thought there were a lot of rural airports that have no landing fee. None.
The only airports in Alaska that are owned by, apologies, through the Chair, Senator Egan, is Anchorage and Fairbanks. That's the international airport system, a different setup by statute. The rest of the airports owned by the state of Alaska, owned and operated by DOT, no landing fees.
So, Senator Egan, just for your information, one of our interests last year, I know from our subcommittee and from the department, were to try to reduce that amount of subsidy through landing fees.
Absolutely.
And they met significant resistance that I don't know necessarily should dissuade us from moving forward, but if there's another option on meeting those costs, I'm certainly open to it.
Well, Juneau's a perfect example. I mean, we charge a landing fee, so we're going to get kind of doubled up here because we're going to be paying the jet fuel increase.
Through the chair to Senator Egan.
While still charging a landing fee.
The jet fuel increase, though, will go back to the Juneau International Airport or go to the city and borough of Juneau.
So it won't go to state-run airports?
Not the one from Juneau, because Juneau has actually...
Juneau, Kenai, and Merrill Field will get that money.
Right, and Juneau gets by far the largest share of the shared tax back to local governments because we have a lot of pass-through flights here. So we actually are here in Juneau will see the most money.
Perhaps you should stop asking about that. So Stedman.
That would have given an idea.
Chairman, just teeing up with Senator Egan's questions, maybe you could get back to the chairman on some of those airport fuel costs. I'm kind of curious about Sitka and Ketchikan and the structure relative to Juneau and, you know, the other areas, just for just general background. Not that there's any issue or concern there. I just like the background information.
But you're correct, Mr. Chair. We talked about this last year.
We did. And it was primarily the rural carriers that were the most resistant. This does look like a more fair way. I think if this goes forward, I'd like to understand your logic on if it covers enough of that gap. I mean, we're going to be asking every individual Alaskan to give something up on services, and perhaps out of our, you know, sovereign wealth accounts, and perhaps out of their individual pockets with additional user fees and perhaps taxes at some point. And I think what I've seen in the polling is support for a broad-based effect that doesn't focus on one individual user group. So that may be something that I'd like to understand your logic and the proportion that it covers. Senator Stedman, did you have a...
Yeah, just a brief comment. I mean, there's, you know, different, I guess, philosophical opinions. I'm not really interested in bidding up the tax bills in the building to raise any more revenue than already presented in front of the legislature, and then sort through the process and decide what we want to do. So you can do that you know, background information. Might as well throw in Wrangell-Petersburg in my previous comments, so I'll make sure I cover all my airports because that's such a vast district. But that being said, I'm not personally excited about a bidding contest on jacking up tax bills. So we'll have those discussions as we go forward.
So let's move on from there. I think it's clear that no one's excited about any tax bills. Is that somewhat united in the committee, probably?
Mr. Chairman, I kind of like building roads and flying in airplanes, sure. And I kind of like keeping people working in my local rural communities that when they lose a job, it's affected and felt in those jobs. And at a time when we're looking at some unusually probably more easier fuel to purchase right now, and I've already got an amendment just written up here if this bill gets any traction that I'll just keep right here, but I just like to say that you know, construction dollars have a way to spin off six times through a community and build more wealth, and I kind of like this bill.
Well, I think you know what I mean by that. We spend our careers trying to keep the cost of being an Alaskan at a minimum, and we suddenly find ourselves facing some very challenging times. And I'm not a big tax fan. I've spent my career reducing taxes wherever possible and made more efficient, but we have a new reality, and fairness and balance in the distribution of that burden is the best we're going to do if things continue the way they have been with our current fiscal gap.
I'd just like to add one more thing on my comment and close with this from my perspective. If people look at what your car gets per gallon today versus what it got 30 years ago, miles per gallon. You look at the new CAFE standards that are being set by the federal government for mileage by 2025. That asphalt, it doesn't know the difference whether that car's getting 10 miles to a gallon or 45 miles to a gallon. That asphalt is wearing out at the same time. And at some point, this is a user fee, and I think it's worthy of a good look, this bill. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to keep public testimony open. I want to make sure that we advertise the next and notice it adequately so that, which I know we have, I think it's worth getting the word out a little bit further. I'd like to hear from some Alaskans that I personally believe that public testimony is a great opportunity to help people understand sort of where we are and why we're looking at some of these options. I'm going to hear these bills. I realize where we are, and I appreciate you bringing it forward. We'll see where it goes from here, but with that, we are scheduled and to keep public testimony open. Looking for the rest of my... and we will notice the next meeting. Do we have that scheduled already?
No, I'll talk to you about it.
Okay, she'll talk to me about it. Having nothing further before us, the meeting is adjourned at 1:46 p.m.